Yup, and welcome to the Serenity Now Sports Podcast with Danny Cohan. And today with co-host Ronnie Vayner, we have a special guest. It's editor-in-chief of Silver Screen and Roll, your spot for all things Lakers and Laker fans. He's dominating the Twitter game, trust me. If you're on Twitter, you know Harrison Fagan. Harrison, thank you for coming on so much, and we're looking forward to hearing you talk more about Lakers.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it, guys. And like, you know, yesterday I was dominating the Twitter game in a bad way. I was just getting roasted for a take I had on Domantas Sabonis. And, you know, like, so, yeah, I mean, it's not you say that as a compliment, but it's not, it's definitely not always a good thing. Like, you know, I wish that I had tweeted that back when I had like 2000 followers or something like that, just so that like it would have had less reach and my mentions wouldn't have been filled with people calling me an idiot all day. But look, like you win some, you lose some.
Yeah, I saw a little bit of that actually recently because you retweeted, you were talking about the LeBron Zlatan. So Zlatan,
yes.
Yeah, he came out and was against, you know, the athletes talking so much about, you know, politics. And you retweeted something. Anytime you put something out on Twitter, you're going to get a lot of hate, especially if you got as much followers as you have. So, but overall, I mean, if you guys are on Twitter and you guys are Laker fans, you need to follow Harrison Fagan. It's at HM Fagan because he covers everything from, you know, the personal lives a little bit, that AD interview a little, that about his ruffles, and but you know, every single like stat in the game he'll give you guys, and Harrison Fagan, he covers it. So let's get right into it. Let's talk about last night's game with the Blazers. Lakers, you know, they have a 4-game losing streak. It was not looking good coming into this game. But, you know, they showed up. Schroeder came back. Schroeder. I don't know how you want to say it, but
Schroeder, I believe is his preferred pronunciation. Yeah.
Okay.
Or I've been saying it wrong the whole time, but I believe we asked him in a Schroeder.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I've heard many different pronunciations. We had Jovan on last time, and he gave me the German pronunciation. So I think he was like Schroeder or something like that. But we'll keep with the Schroeder.
And, yeah, I'm gonna trust Jovan on that one more than me.
Yeah, so after that game, you know, he had 22. He looked really good, and I know Lakers without him in the lineup, they're 0-4. With him, they're 23-7. They're a totally different team. And it got me thinking, you know, like who, you know, last year we were looking at the Lakers squad, and everyone wanted to know who's the third guy. Obviously, LeBron's number one, and AD's two. But who's number three? And last year it was Kuzma. We thought he was going to be the guy, but he didn't really, you know, he wasn't consistent. He wasn't there every game performing like we Laker fans thought he would. Now, you know, if it's up to me, I would put Schroeder as the third guy. I think he's number three. But I want to hear for you, you know, you watch every single game. You covered the team so closely. Who would you rank as the number 3 through 5 as the most important Lakers on the team?
Ooh, three through five is good. I was ready for three, but 3 through 5 I'm gonna have to think about for a second. But yeah, I mean, it's exactly like you said. Like, nobody was happier than Dennis Schroeder's agent, you know, over the watching the last four games and then watching last night after that. Like, because now it's like you said, they're winless without him. And again, like, you know, if AD was playing right now, I'm pretty sure that we would not be having the same discussion. I don't think the Lakers would have went winless over those last four games. But we are seeing that when AD is out, Dennis Schroeder's importance as an extra ball handler, a guy who can go and create his own shot, the Lakers just kind of don't have that. As deep as they are, they don't have a lot of guys that are that adept at that. And you just saw last night, like, it was a whole different version of LeBron. He had more energy to put forward on defense because it wasn't after having to do every single thing offensively for this team. And, you know, Alex Caruso was able to slide back into a normal role. Just everybody looked a lot more comfortable having those multiple ball handlers out there with Schroeder back in the lineup. So I think it's like you said, he's the clear number three at this point. I think earlier this year, I might have argued Alex Caruso, and I still think that when this team is fully healthy, when everyone is engaged, I think that Caruso is potentially the third most impactful player. But I think that in terms of like, actual, like, if they're, you know, if one of them were to miss time, you know, we've seen now that it's a lot more important for the Lakers to have Schroeder than it is to have Caruso. So it's interesting, like, the basketball puzzle piece aspect of that is always interesting. Like, Caruso is one of these guys where he's great when he's around a lot of other good players, but, you know, he's kind of more of a wheel greaser than he is, you know, a guy that can be counted on for any primary stuff. And that's one of the things that I love about basketball and covering it is kind of learning how many different ways there are to value guys and how different puzzle pieces all fit together. So I think to get back, now that I verbally filibustered for long enough, I feel like, you know, number three is Schroeder. I think number four is probably Caruso. And then number five, I would honestly, I'd go either Trez or KCP. I think so far this season, it's been Trez. But, you know, at last year's playoffs, we saw KCP was arguably the, not even really arguably, he was like the Lakers' third best player for, you know, if you are looking on balance at the entire playoffs, every single round. So I think, you know, almost for legacy purposes, I want to put him, but he just hasn't been as consistent this year, which is understandable given the short turnaround. And Trez is always giving that energy. I think that we just saw again over the last couple of games without Schroeder that that energy isn't as important if you don't have guys that can utilize it and kind of take advantage of him and cover for him on defense and, you know, create situations for him to succeed. And with him back, all of a sudden he has another natural ball handler to get him the ball. He has another threat that kind of sucks in defensive attention so that he can dominate his matchup. So I'm going to go Trez number five.
Trez five. So let me get the replay on that. You got Schroeder third.
Yeah. Caruso. And then fifth is Trez.
Trez five. So that's interesting because, you know, I was listening recently to the Zach Lowe podcast with Ramona Shelburne. And he was thinking that he liked the Kuzma third. And that surprised me. That he liked Kuzma like up high because
Lakers. Kuz has been really good. Kuz has the genuine argument for one of these spots for sure.
Yeah, he definitely has an argument. For me, Schroeder for sure is the three, especially when out without AD there, you need his offense.
And it's one of these things where like if AD was there, then all of a sudden maybe he drops down in terms of importance. But right now for this team without AD, like, you know, we saw he is incredibly important last night.
Right. So Kuz would be your sixth man, would be right there.
Yeah, I think honestly, you know, I that's my bad for overlooking him. But yeah, Kuz is probably sixth over KCP at this point. KCP's had kind of a really up and down start, but Kuz has been playing mostly winning basketball. And, you know, again, he was another guy last night that, you know, he didn't have an incredible game by any means, but he was more slotted into a natural role and I think was able to make a little bit more of an impact on the win.
Yeah, I want to get my co-host Ronnie in here because I know he's a big Kuzma guy. And I think we've seen him fit in more this year than he did last year. He's playing more on the defensive end. So Ronnie, you got a question for Harrison regarding Kuz?
Yeah. So over the last few years, Kuzma's role has for the Lakers has changed. He started off as a scorer guy. He came in, always scored. But over the years, when AD came, you know, his role as a scorer, he was expected to be part of the big three. But his scoring kind of came down with AD. But this year, his role has completely changed. His defensive role has become like immense and he's getting rebounds, getting blocks. His role on the defensive end is amazing. So what do you think about the change in Kuz this year? Like, do you think it's better? How has he developed as a player?
Yeah, I mean, I think that it's exactly like you said, his role has changed every single year. He went from rookie year, he was like go-to scorer. Second year, he kind of had to prove it a little bit again, and then he ended up being that second guy or like third guy, however you want to put it, behind LeBron and Brandon Ingram. And then, you know, his third year, he comes in, and I think he really struggled at times with finding that complementary role. I don't think that he really found his groove until the playoffs. Like, you know, you're a self-described big Kuz guy, so you know, like during the playoffs that he made an impact. Like, yeah, yes, he got lit up by Jimmy Butler a couple times during the finals, but that's not really a fair matchup to completely judge him by, especially the way that Jimmy Butler was playing in the bubble and going throughout the playoffs. And Kuz is like a little slight, I think, to defend him. But overall, I thought his defense was, you know, he showed signs of what he's doing right now over the playoff run because he almost had like a mini offseason in between that to really think about, okay, how do I fit in on this team? What can I do to make an impact? And, you know, I believe he's talked about being able to kind of have that introspection time and learn. And then, you know, you have, look, it's only 2 months, but he's a young guy. He was probably able to somewhat stay in the gym during this offseason for the Lakers. And he was able, you know, he saw during the playoff run, okay, this is how I fit. Oh, the Lakers added Schroeder and Trez. I really am not going to be counted on for my scoring. I really have to work on these other things. And it's kind of crazy that his role, you know, this season has almost been a microcosm of his role during his time with the Lakers, where it feels like it shifts almost every single game where, like, you know, while Schroeder was out and AD was already out, he had to go back into trying to be that secondary scorer, alongside Trez. So 2 and 3 or whatever it may be. And, you know, then there are other games where all of a sudden Schroeder comes back. It's like, okay, Kuz, we need you for wing defense. And that's about it. Like, we aren't going to count on you for a ton of scoring or a ton of offensive possessions or whatever. And it's been kind of seamless. Like, he just kind of slides back and forth. And I think for me, the biggest difference has been that it seems like this year, the last couple of years, when AD was out or when LeBron was out or like when a star was out and there were shots to be taken, Kuz was hunting those shots. Like, he wanted those shots very clearly. And I think, you know, he's denied that this is the case. The Lakers have denied that this is the case, but I still maintain that I think that the extension added a level of kind of subconscious comfort where I don't have to play for my next paycheck right now. So I can kind of do whatever helps the team win, because that's all that really matters. And I don't have to show, like, I think that I can be this other guy, but I don't have to show that just yet. And I will get those opportunities maybe down the line. But for now, they need me to play this complementary role. And so even in the games where AD is out or where LeBron is out, he's not just clearly like hunting shots as much as he was beforehand, sometimes even to his detriment. But I think that he realized that when it matters, he has to be ready to play this complementary role, and he's trying to get as many reps as that, at that as he can.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. He's super flexible in everything he does. Like, whenever someone's out, he fits that role, and that's what makes him so good for the Lakers. Whenever someone's out, he has to fit that role. With AD, he's come in as another scorer. He's been playing really well, rebounding. He's playing all around really well. So whenever the Lakers need him to come through, he does, because he fits a role. He fits every role. He can play all around pretty well. And so whenever someone's out, he really fits that role and does really well for the Lakers.
Yeah, so Laker fans, take it easy on Kuz, man. He's coming back, and he knows his role more, I think. And I think he's been great this year. I think he was a little disappointed.
You can kind of tell who's been watching the games on Twitter and like who's just looking at the box score, like, by depending on what games they're slandering Kuzma after or what they're saying about his game or whatever. Like, you could really tell who's actually paying attention to who's helping the team out on the floor.
And Harrison, you know who the new guy is that is getting a lot of trash talk from Laker fans? It's Marc Gasol. So Marc Gasol, I think he had a lot of high expectations coming into this season, you know, especially we saw what Powell did for our Lakers squad. And he came in a little out of shape, it seemed, but and he missed a couple big free throws the other day in a loss. But you know, he hasn't really showed up in the big moments that we were hoping to see from Marc Gasol. And I think a big concern that Laker fans have, it's one concern that I have for sure, is that, you know, what separated us last year was that one of the things was having those two big men, right? It was having JaVale and Dwight down low. And not only, you know, you had Dwight banging with guys and being physical, but then also that combined with having JaVale, who can run the floor, they could both catch lobs. They were great with LeBron, I feel like, because LeBron, he's always looking to throw lobs, and those two are long, they're lanky, and they can jump, right? And Marc Gasol, he's not that player. So with the buyout market developing right now, we're going to see, you know, trade deadlines in a month. And we're going to see who becomes available. I want to know from you, who do you think are realistic options that you think are going to be available for the Lakers? I know there's some talk about Drummond, maybe Blake Griffin, Trevor Ariza. And then what are the Lakers' biggest need that you think they have? Is it that athletic big man shot blocker, or is it more of a 3-and-D, 3-point shooter kind of guy?
So honestly, I'm inclined to lean towards the latter, like the 3-and-D shooting guy. And I know that everyone is kind of screaming to high heaven that this team needs an athletic big man. This, like, exactly what you were saying about JaVale and Dwight. And I do feel like that's an element that the team has at times missed. That said, they're playing basically better defense than they were last year. They're fouling less. Like, I think it looks different, but I do think that Gasol has been more effective than people are giving him credit for. But that said, he has not been perfect. And like, I think even he would admit that he has not played up to his standards, even though the team has been good and the starting lineup with him in it has been good. He's not a perfect player, and he has not played perfectly this season. And so I understand why people want to get an athletic big and why people are saying that that's a need, and why, you know, people are talking themselves into Damian Jones being like JaVale McGee 2.0, even though pretty much the only NBA skill that he has, from talking to people who have covered his last couple teams, is catching lobs. And like, that is pretty much, that's about it. He is tall and he can catch lobs. And like the Lakers do, like they could use someone like that, but they also need someone that can kind of defend the rim competently, that fits into their system offensively, that can maybe space the floor, you know, like they have a lot of different needs. And for me, you know, just the fact that this team's three-point shooting has been really bad. Like they're, you know, last time I don't know. No, this definitely didn't go up after last night because they shot like 25% from deep. They're shooting over the last like 15, 16 games, the worst percentage from three in the league. And that was a trend for them going into last season's playoffs. So we know that this team can somewhat flip a switch, but if I'm looking at needs, it's another wing more than that can hit threes more than it is a big, just because I don't see those bigs playing when it matters. And if they are, then you're kind of screwed anyway. And the reason that I say that is because we saw all of last year throughout the playoffs that when this team, like when it matters for this team, they're going to play Anthony Davis at center and let him be just a walking mismatch at that position. And so, you know, you're not going to bring in a guy that's going to kick Gasol out of the rotation. You're not going to bring in a guy that's going to kick Trez out of the rotation unless they make like some unexpected trade involving Trez or something like that. But I don't really foresee that. Then, you know, if those two guys are your main fives and AD is your kind of small ball super weapon Death Star option at the five, then I just don't see where the minutes are for a, you know, whether it's DeMarcus Cousins, who it sounds like they're not going to go and get anyway, but or Andre Drummond maybe has more of a case to be able to do some of that stuff. But if he gets bought out, I really see him going to the Nets. That feels like basically an inevitability. Like they have a much bigger hole at center for him to talk himself into getting a bigger role and getting paid in the offseason and making up some of whatever he, you know, took back on a buyout. And so for me, like it's the wing, just because I don't think that anyone that they sign on the buyout market as a big is going to play when it matters, where you can in the 2020, 2021 NBA, you can always use more wing defenders. And the Lakers specifically could use another three-point shooter. And so that's where I would lean. I'm kind of curious what you guys think, though.
I agree 100%. I think, like, the defense, it gets frustrating when you watch sometimes because there's a lot of missed assignments. But when you look at the numbers, the defense is not the issue. The offense is the issue. And I feel like you said they can turn it on, right? Well, shooting, I don't feel like it's something that can be turned on. I think that in the bubble, they shot well, and some of that is luck. You know, shooting is streaky, and shooting sometimes is contagious. And I don't think we can
for sure, but like I think maybe flip the switch wasn't the right word, but I do. I'm sorry to cut you off, but like I do think that it's less a flip the switch than it is like I think that they're going to get better shots in the postseason because when LeBron and AD are really going, and we have not seen them activate that level often this season, but when they are, they just free up better shots. Like I think that some of that was streakiness and luck, like you're saying, but I do think that some of it was the types of shots they were getting, the amount that LeBron and AD were sucking in defenses and the amount of attention they were. I think there's some part of that that's also a factor.
Right. So the fact that they're going to get a lot more wide open shots in the playoffs with AD and LeBron drawing so much attention, obviously those are the two guys that the defense are going to focus on. So you're going to see a lot of wide open threes, which they did get in the bubble. And yeah, it's going to be extremely important that they have someone there that's consistent and can knock it down. And you mentioned the Nets. And they have a guy that can do that in Joe Harris. They have a lot of great shooters surrounding those guys. So I want to hear.
They do.
and I want to know for you, who are the true competition for the Lakers, you think, for them to go back to back? So, you know, looking back in NBA history, the lowest seed in the modern era that I can remember going to the finals and winning the whole thing was the Rockets, right? It was 95, I believe, that they went and they played the Magic and they swept Shaq and they went back to back. Now Lakers trying to go back to back.
Were they the four seed that year? I'm trying to remember.
They were the sixth seed. Yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay. I did not realize it was that low. Yeah. I knew they were a lower seed, but I didn't realize it was sixth.
Yeah. So they had struggled during the regular season. I think that they had made a trade for Clyde Drexler midway through. And, you know, when you win a championship the next year, you have that championship hangover. We saw it with the Shaq and Kobe era. The next year, after 2000, they didn't play that hard in the regular season until the end of the regular season. And then the playoffs, they played at a level I had never seen before, since Golden State, I guess. I had never seen a team play at that level that they played in that 2001 where they only, almost they should have swept, but Iverson went off in that game.
Yeah, like one Iverson shot kept them from like an untouchable NBA record. Yeah,
and like a 6-point lead in overtime too. They could have still.
Yeah. Oh it. Man.
Yeah, and so I want to know from you, like, if the Lakers say they finish, AD's injury does last longer. I know what you when you interviewed him, you said he wants to come back, but the team, they're being a little cautious with him. But say things.
Yeah, it only took one re-aggravation of the Achilles injury for them to be like, okay, yeah, now you need to sit down. Like, I know that that's hard to get these guys that are competitive to sit down, but I did think that was funny that he, like, even after that, or not funny, but morbidly funny a little bit, that even after that, he's still like, yeah, I really want to get out there and play, and they're having to tell me don't do it. And it's like, AD, yeah, they should be telling you not to do it. Right. Like,
yeah, and the fact that LeBron is playing third in minutes and he's trying to play 82 games, I don't like that either. I mean, this guy's...
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah, this is a championship team. This is the playoffs matter. But so I want to know from you, say that they do struggle in the regular season and they rest these guys a little and they end up as a sixth seed, right? Do you think that they can still repeat the way Houston did as a seed that low to go on the road in three rounds? Or do you think that they need to finish as a top three seed in order to have a realistic chance at becoming back-to-back champions?
So no, I do not. So the second one, no, I don't think that, because I would not have picked them to win the title, but also finish as the four seed during the preseason if I believe that. So I like that was my pick. I'm sticking with it. It's, that I did not expect an Anthony Davis injury, but I did expect them to kind of take it easier at times and have some lulls, whatever that may be, whether it was just rest for guys or, just going out and not having that championship hangover that you talked about. So I did expect them to finish, towards the lower half of the top half of the bracket. But that said, like, I do think I'm not super worried about home court advantage. And I don't think that this team is either. Like, their road record has been better than their home record this season. And some of that is like getting a little bit of extra juice from having fans in the building on the road, where at home, I haven't been because I don't really see the risk reward trade-off, but just watching on TV, Staples Center looks like a mausoleum. Like, it's got to be eerie to play in a just this cavernous building with like 40, 40 to 50 to, however many people in it. It's just got to be weird. And so I understand that aspect of it. And also, like, okay, let's say that the Lakers do have to go on the road. What does that mean? Like, who are they playing on the road that's going to finish with a better record than them? Like Brooklyn, like their vaunted home court advantage with like rabid tons of Nets fans, like, there will probably be a decent amount of Lakers fans in the building for that. And okay, like, let's say before the finals, during the Western Conference playoffs, like, are they afraid to go and play in LA on the road against the Clippers? Like, no, I don't think so. That building's going to be 75% Lakers fans, like, at worst. And so, are they afraid to go on the road and play against Utah? Like, I doubt it, not if AD's healthy. I just don't see, look, like, the Jazz kicked the Lakers' ass the other night. But like Markieff said, after the game, the playoffs are a different story. And I still, the Jazz didn't show me anything that I didn't already know in that game. Like, I know that they're playing amazing right now. But the question that I have for them in a playoff series is, can they slow down LeBron and AD at the same time? And AD is like legally Rudy Gobert's father in the games that they've played against. Like, he has adopted him in those games is the best way to describe it. And so I'm not concerned about that matchup until we find out that AD is not healthy. And then so, like, you're looking through the West and it's like, where does the home court advantage matter? This is just a weird year. And, who knows if fans are even going to be in what building and whatever. Like, I'm just not incredible. And obviously there's other parts of home court advantage, like getting to sleep in your own bed. But I think that it's lessened during the playoffs because every team is traveling in between games. It's not like you have an inherent home court or road disadvantage because you had to fly there while the other team was waiting there. Like, they had to fly back from LA too. And so I do think that in a lot of ways, like, that stuff is minimized during the postseason, especially a weird one like this. So if they continue to sleepwalk or take their time and treat regular season games as practices and whatever, I'm not concerned about really anything until we find out that AD's injury is going to linger. And as long as they can get him to something reasonably approximating health, like, he wasn't fully healthy last year, but get him to something close to that for the playoffs, I'm not incredibly concerned about the road stuff. Like, the main thing for me is his health, And then also just some of the play of other of these other teams, like the Clippers are playing really, really well. Like they've had, you know, a little bit of a slump recently, but to start the year, they were playing incredible basketball and they're better, I think, and a better matchup for the Lakers than they were last year. I'm still not picking them against the Lakers, but they're a threat. The Nets are a threat, you know, but beyond that, as long as the Lakers are healthy, there's not, there aren't really teams that I think have much of a puncher's chance against them.
Yeah, so the Nets are the only team in the East, do you think, that is a real threat?
I mean, I think, look, like, I think the Bucks maybe, I still have confidence in them that they're going, I think this year they're going to have the opposite of the last couple of years where they're a better playoff team than they are a regular season one. But we'll see, like, you know, their coach has a lot of questions to answer about halftime, you know, like, not halftime adjustments, game-to-game adjustments and things like that that he hasn't really made in past years, you know. Philly doesn't really scare me. Like that game was really close and I don't think that the Lakers really tried that hard for 75% of it. And, you know, I think as great as the Sixers are, you know, I'm just not incredibly afraid of the Lakers' ability to at least slow down Joel Embiid a little bit. Marc Gasol has been really good in that matchup the last couple of years. Anthony Davis is a guy who, you know, Embiid's going to get his. I'm not saying they're going to shut him down or anything, but I do think the Lakers can capably guard him and at least make him work for it to the level that they can force the other Sixers to struggle.
You know, my concern is not so much going on the road. Because I think a lot of the advantage of home of being at home, right, is the fact that, and studies have been done that show that you get more calls at home, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely fair.
The fans influence the referees. And I feel like LeBron James also does influence the referees as much as the fans. And going into Utah, that's a tough place to win, right? I understand. But I mean, the Clippers is not going to be much different whether they change the bottom of the floor or not. But my concern is that having to beat the Clippers, say they're the three seed, right? They got to go beat the Clippers. Then they got to go win at Utah. Then they got to go maybe go at, you know, or at home versus the Nets or versus the Bucks. It's that wears you down. That's tough. There's a tougher road than say being the first seed, you know, only having to see either Utah or the Clippers, right? Not both.
Yeah, no, it's definitely a tougher road. The only other thing that I would say on like the refs thing is, look, like we've seen LeBron, you know, when opposing fans piss him off like that this year, like he's got to be averaging like 20 points in the fourth quarter when he gets pissed off by a fan at home. So honestly, having fans on the road may be an advantage for the Lakers at this point, at this stage of LeBron's career. It does seem like he's added like kind of the FU to his game really this
season. He's got that Reggie Miller. When he's on the road, he plays even better because starts trash talking with the fans.
Yeah, he just sees, like, all LeBron sees is just a bunch of Spike Lees in the crowd right now. Like, that's his whole vision. He just has Spike Lee vision.
I love it. And Harrison, I also wanted to get into the fact that you have another podcast, right? I know you have a podcast with your wife, and it kind of reminds me, I was checking it out, it reminds me a little bit of the Rewatchables podcast with Bill Simmons. And but I, you know, I really enjoy it. It's called Rewind and Reconsider. You guys need to check it out. You guys' relationship between you and your wife is a nice little back and forth that you guys have. And we also are trying to do a little movie podcast. We have one. It's called Large Popcorn and Two Slushies, Please. So I want to know if we want to be like a Bill Simmons or a Harrison Fagan and have both the and the entertainment.
Those are different levels of success, man. I'm sorry. Like Bill Simmons, I think is like he's got to be a billionaire. Or he's not a billionaire, but he's at least a multimillionaire.
Yeah, he's up there. Yeah.
Well, yeah, you know, if we want to be a Quinn Cook or a Michael Jordan, like, you know, it's.
No, you got to give yourself more credit. I was telling Harrison, Ronnie, the other day that, all right, so say all sports writers were basketball cards, right? Or sports journalists, right? So I think that the Babe Ruth card, right now, you have to give it to Woj, right? The number one baseball card. And then, but if you're looking at the rookie cards, the guys that are coming up, you know, the young guys, you know, it's Shams. And then I got to say, the last two guests, Jovan Buha and Harrison Fagan, they're up and coming, and they're Laker guys. So you got
what else? Yeah, okay. I think that it is dangerous to compare myself to Shams at this point. Again, you're setting me up for like failure here. But it's like, look, like, you know, yeah, if you, like that is a steep drop off. I'm just saying, if you're doing like the 30 under 30 and you're going like, okay, like number one is Shams, number two is Jovan, and then like number three, we got this blogger that
writes. No, Shams doesn't have a movie podcast. He's not editor of Silver Screen and Roll. He doesn't got all the things that are going on that Harrison Fagan going on. So you guys, thank you so much for your time, Harrison Fagan. I really appreciate it. And I want to get in one more little controversial subject. And I want Roni's opinion on this as well. All right. So there's been a lot of talk lately, right? That maybe this logo needs to change. Kyrie Irving was the one that sparked it. I think he came out and said, you know, why isn't Kobe the logo, right? Maybe it's time for a change to move from Jerry West to Kobe. And then also, I think Kendrick Perkins amplified that thought recently on TV, I saw. And so I want to know, you know, what's your thoughts there? Do you think it's time that the NBA look at changing the logo? Or do you think that, you know, It is the way it is. It's perfect. There's no need to change it. And, you know, it's a tradition of the game. Let's keep it Jerry West. Let's keep it the way it is.
Yeah. So, you know, I have a lot of thoughts about this. And I wrote about some of them yesterday on Silver Screen and Roll when Jeannie Buss came out and joined. Kind of Vanessa Bryant also endorsed the idea. And, you know, that's a complicated thing, too, because, like, yeah, she's endorsing the idea, but is she going to give his likeness to the NBA for free? Like, probably not. And then that's an issue for the NBA in terms of like monetary stuff and whatever. And that's a whole complication into itself. But, you know, I think that they're, number one, the logo is perfect. Like, if we're just looking in a complete vacuum, the logo looks great. It's instantly recognizable. It's iconic. I understand what Kyrie is saying, though. I do think that there is an element of it is a little strange that a league that right now demographically, I believe, breaks down to 75% Black players or close to it, like if you round up, is a white guy from the 60s. Like, that is a little strange in 2020, 2021, with all the kind of talks that we're having about representation and diversity and making sure that diversity is properly reflected. Like, I understand the point that he is trying to make and what he's trying to say. That said, I think there are a lot of reasons that the NBA is not going to ever change it. And I think number one, above all else, is that they have never acknowledged that Jerry West is the logo. And because of that, they are able to use that drawing for free, even though, like, the guy who drew it has said that it was Jerry West, it was based on him, whatever. The NBA has never legally and publicly acknowledged that it is West, and West has never sued them. And so they do not have to ever they don't have to pay him money to use that likeness. There is also the matter of it is, you know, in terms of changing your organization's logo when it's so instantly recognizable worldwide, I just don't know that from a business perspective, they would ever make that decision. And there would also be a ton of costs associated with that in terms of changing all of their merchandise, changing all of their like web stuff, changing all of their, you know, whatever it may be, if they're trying to change that, figuring out who it would be and not starting, you know, an internet flame war over that. There's also the reality that this is not, as much as, you know, it seems like it is because a lot of famous people are talking about it, this is not a broadly popular change or idea to change it to Kobe. You know, we asked for our SB Nation Reacts poll, which polls NBA fans from around the league. Would you support changing the logo to Kobe Bryant? And only 35% said yes. That's far less, like, that's not even half. That's like way less than the majority. And, you know, while again, that's a smaller sample size of people, and who knows if like a broader, you know, base, that percentage would change. But I just can't imagine that for as much love and support and things that there were when Kobe died tragically last year, you know, I don't think that this is going to be something that is broadly popular with fans of all 30 teams and people around the world and whatever. And then there's also the biggest elephant in the room of all of this is that, you know, in 2003, Kobe was accused of sexual assault. Again, he settled out of court. Well, he never got his day in court, or not never got his day. That sounds like he was denied it. He paid a lot to not have his day in court. But because there was never a legal decision in that case, that is something that is nebulous that will always hang over his legacy. And with the Me Too movement, with the way that we have you know, begun the way that I think we as a society have tried to be better about believing, you know, accusers and believing people who are believing victims and things like that. I just can't imagine that they're this is something where they're going to embrace the potential, you know, just like anger and like, you know, feelings that that would provoke of changing the logo to Kobe in this time. I think that, you know, they changed the All-Star Game MVP. They named that after him. You know, if they want to change the logo, I'm open to that conversation. I just think that for a lot of reasons, I don't think it's ever going to be Kobe.
Yeah, all those reasons you gave is a perfect are perfect reasons. The biggest ones is I think is the financial thing that you brought up first of all.
Yeah, honestly, I'm not going to accuse the NBA of being altruistic or trying to like be like this great. Like we've seen over the last couple of years, this is not an altruistic entity. Like the biggest thing is the money. Like as much as any of us want it to be the morality or want it to be whatever it may be, like for the NBA, it's going to be the money, and that's what it comes down to.
And I think that we, as Laker fans, we wear rose-colored glasses a lot of times, and we forget that Kobe is a controversial figure around the nation. And there's of course, you know, we had Lakers had a lot of rivals. There are a lot of people that weren't fans of Kobe Bryant, and they don't want him to be a logo. And I think Jerry West is not a very controversial a pick, and they won't even admit himself. Ronnie, what do you think? What do you think? Is there, besides the logo, you know, maybe there's a better way that they can honor him, or do you think the logo is something that they should pursue?
Well, I totally agree with both of you guys. I feel like changing the logo to Kobe is just so much. It's such a huge change for the NBA, and I feel like it's just not worth it on their part. Like right now in the last year or so, everyone's reverence for Kobe is just like amazing. Everyone's respecting him. Everyone's paying their respects, no matter what team they're for. Everyone respects Kobe, most people. And I just feel like changing the NBA logo when it's Jerry West, like you guys said, it's just like such a neutral logo, and it's been the logo for so long now. And just changing it in the trend of Kobe would be like too much of a change financially and things like that. But like Harrison said, putting the NBA All-Star MVP trophy to the Kobe trophy, that's perfect. They need to honor his name in some way every single year because he's such a huge figure for the NBA. Change the course of the NBA. He's so huge for a Lakers organization, everything overall. So I think every year, maybe they could rename the MVP trophy to him every year, or they could have like an annual something for him. You know, they need to do something that honors his name, but changing the NBA logo would be far too much of a change financially. And I don't think they're going to do it because it's too much for them, in my opinion. But I see how NBA players want to have that happen because they all respect them so much.
The other thing is too, like they all watched him play and looked up to his game and learned. Like for Kyrie, he was a mentor. Kyrie talked about that, and he's you know, he's saying it because he wants to honor the work and he wants to honor the people who built the league. And in large part, that was Black people. Again, I understand where he is coming from on this. I just don't think that Kobe is necessarily the right guy to put that on, and I'm not sure really who is. I was thinking about this while you were talking, and I could see it someday. Like LeBron, because he has been so non-controversial for the most part throughout his career, like in terms of just like there aren't like bad, there aren't like horrible, like there aren't skeletons in LeBron's closet that we're aware of or anything like that. And I could see something like that where it's changed to maybe a similar dribbling, like Jumpman logo. But again, you get into the likeness costs, and LeBron is not going to give the NBA that for free unless they give him an NBA team for free or something like that. Like, so I just think it's like, I understand why people want this to change, but I just don't really see it.
Yeah. You know what, Harrison, I really want to know, what do you think that Kobe's statue is going to be? So I'm really looking forward to seeing when they reveal Kobe's statue. And I want to know, because there's so many things that you could choose from, right? I like seeing him on top of the scores table with his hands raised, number 5, after they beat the Celtics. I'd like to see him with the jersey ripped after that Phoenix shot, you know, with Vic the Brick in the background. You know, there's so many classic Kobe moments. So what would you choose for Kobe's statue?
Yeah, so I think it's a tough thing because normally when you're memorializing these guys, they're showing up to the ceremony. Like it's a big triumphant moment. The thing that I keep thinking about is I don't think that it's going to be that. Like, I think that there's a chance that maybe they do two, and one of them is, my guess would be an iconic, like, what, his fadeaway jumper. Like, the, I think it's the pose that everyone, that was the weirdest thing about the whole logo discussion, was like the design that the person made was Kobe dribbling a ball. And I understand like why they did that. It's like similar to the Jerry West thing, but like, if they were going to change the logo to a Kobe pose, it would be his fadeaway. Like, it would not be like him dribbling the ball. That was not, you know, Kobe obviously could handle the ball totally fine, but like, that's not the thing that we most remember about him, was his ball handling skills. It was like the audacity of the shots that he took, and like the creativity and the angles that shooting, he found to get them off. Yeah, exactly. It would have to be shooting. So I think that there might, my guess, and again, this is not reported, this is just something that I've been thinking about a lot, and my guess would be that one of the statues is like a fadeaway somewhere, or like him standing on the scorer's table after that Boston Celtics championship, where he's counting to five, and like the iconic moment that everybody remembers of celebration. Yeah. And but I would imagine that there will be one somewhere of him and Gianna together courtside watching a basketball game, or him watching her play or something like that. Because I do think that the Lakers, with the way that they are and how much they still are wanting to support the Bryant family and wanting to support Vanessa and all of that, like, I don't think that they would do a Kobe memoriam anymore without Gigi being involved. So yeah. I do think that, like, we may see, you know, the photo that everybody used that almost has like a sad connotation now because it was used so frequently after they died, because there were only so many photos of the two of them together. But the one of him sitting courtside and kind of whispering in her ear and pointing out like the nuances of the pick and roll game or whatever they were watching from, I believe it was Trae Young, and like him breaking stuff down to her. I could see a statue like that of the two of them just sitting courtside watching basketball forever as well.
I think that would be the ideal, that they have two, like the two jerseys. One with Gigi, but as I was asking the question, I was like, yeah, Gigi has to be in there. You're right.
Yeah. I think now, like, I think now you can't do one without the, I think it would be tough, and maybe they will, but I think that they will want to make sure that she's remembered in some way too.
All right. And last thing, I know I said I'm only going to keep you 20-30 minutes, but last
no
thing.
Man, you're good. You're good. I'm having fun. You're good.
All right. I want to know. So I always have arguments with my friends back and forth on text about Pau Gasol. Some of them don't think he should have his jersey retired, and that surprises me, because I think he was the second best player on a Laker team that won two titles. You know, he's going to be a Hall of Famer. He's Pau Gasol. Why not? Why shouldn't he have his jersey retired right away? Do you think his jersey will be retired? And then when do you think it will be retired by the Lakers? Do you have any insight into that?
I do not, but honestly, I thought that what might happen would be this year they would bring him in at some point, like if fans were ever allowed at any point, and bring him in and retire it. You know, normally they wait for the Hall of Fame induction, but like, Pau's going to get into the Hall of Fame for his NBA, not even just for his NBA body of work, but like, he's one of the greatest international players of all time and one of the most accomplished ones in terms of how he helped like build that Spanish basketball program. And so he's going to be a Hall of Famer. That's inevitable. It may be not first ballot. I think he probably will be, but maybe not. I forget exactly what year he's becomes eligible and what other guys he'll be going against, but he's going to get in. And so, you know, if that's the case, they pretty much retire everyone's jersey who makes the Hall of Fame. And if Pau, you know, they know he's going to get in, I would love to see his jersey retirement. I know, again, I know Mark has become this year's Danny Green, but it would be a really sweet moment for, I think, Pau to get his jersey retired while his brother is playing in the building and be able to be a part of that, like, very naturally and very easily, because he doesn't have to make time in his schedule. Like, he's already there. He's there for the game that night. And so, you know, I don't think that it's going to happen this year, but maybe next year. You know, we're all hoping fans will be allowed back by that point. We'll be at a point with this virus where we'll all be able to go outside and do things again. You know, maybe next year Mark is under contract and maybe they'll do something like that. But again, I don't know. To me, it's insane to suggest that they would not retire his jersey. He, you know, again, Kobe led those teams indisputably to those championships. I think that the arguments that Pau should have won finals MVP over him in that last year just because he had a better last game are crazy. Like, that was Kobe's team. Kobe led that team all the way. You had to give him the finals MVP in that final year, but he won the title in 2010. But Pau, you know, the Lakers weren't title contenders until Pau arrived, and he helped rebuild that team. He was the perfect, like, he had a perfect symbiosis with Kobe on the court and off the court. You know, you have to retire his jersey. That's not even a question to me.
I mean, yeah, I'm right there with you. And you know, the last thing, wrapping up, I know I said last thing 5 times, but I want to know is
No, that's a good radio trick. You just keep saying last thing and the
yeah,
person's
keep
like,
saying
oh
last
yeah,
thing.
good point. All right, last thing. Okay, I get it.
For every question, if you say last thing, then the guest has to stay.
I'll do that in my next Q&A that I get with AD through Ruffles or something. I'll just say last question 10 times. I think I did that like 3 times during my interview. So you know, you're totally good. I know the game.
No, when you brought up Mark, do you think that was part of why they brought him in? Was because of with Kobe's passing and his, you know, Powell and Kobe's close relationship? Was that part of the reason you think that they brought Mark in or made it more likely that would bring him in?
I think it's an added bonus, but like, no, I don't think so. I mean, I think, look, he was one of the most talented centers available on the market. I know Lakers fans are not happy with how he's played this season. I think he's been better than people are giving him credit for on both ends. And, you know, but they haven't fully utilized his skill set on offense either. Like, a lot of the time, he is just a 7 foot spot up shooter. And, you know, I think that maybe they should be trying during these games really to try and run a little bit more through him from the high posts and use him as a passer. And I'm not really sure why they're not doing that. But like that would be my, you know, inclination in terms of how to use him better. But all that aside, I don't think that that necessarily had anything to do with it. He was one of the top centers on the market. I think that they felt like he was an offensive upgrade, and I still think he could be over both of the guys that they have last year. And so, no, I don't think that it necessarily was a factor in their decision making. But look, like, you know, we know that Rob Pelinka is a storyteller. He loves a good narrative. I'm sure it did not hurt Mark's chances in to be able to get in there.
Yeah, and you know the if we're looking at trades for Lakers, the guys that really have trade value, it seems like, are just, you know, Talen Horton-Tucker, THT, and Alex Caruso, because they don't have huge contracts and they're young guys with a lot of upside. Do you think that the Lakers will make a trade for one, and then two, who out of the guys that are available, who should they go after? So Ronnie was saying that Bradley Beal, the Lakers should do whatever they can to get him. Do you think that's an option that's possible for Lakers to go after?
Hey, they absolutely should do whatever they can to get Bradley Beal. They're not going to be able to, but like they should try. Like they just don't have the contracts to really make it work, especially not a mid-season trade. That's a trade you could do in the off-season because you can do like, you know, 6 for 1 or something like that. But during the season, you can't make a trade like that just under the cap rules and with roster minimums and having to play games and, you know, whatever it may be. Like it's just, and also like, to think that they wouldn't be outbid for him is kind of like at this point crazy. Like there are other teams with more assets that will be able to offer for him. Like as much as, you know, I know, look, like Silver Screen Roll is as guilty of this as anyone. We Photoshop every opposing star into a Lakers jersey, but like, you know, I that doesn't mean that we think it's going to happen. And I don't think that the Beal thing is very likely right now, especially since Washington's kind of turned it around and we know that they want to make a playoff push with him and see if they can convince him to be happy there. And he wants to stay there. You know, all reports are right now. The guy that I could see them making a trade for is the guy that Woj mentioned the other day is PJ Tucker. But it's also hard to make the contracts work, especially without, you know, like I was talking to like someone that I know that knows the cap pretty well. And they were saying like, you know, like the only contract that really works in that case is Trez. And like, with the clutch connection, like all of that stuff, I just can't really see them making that move. Like it would be a fascinating trade, right? Because they're basically saying, you know, okay, actually maybe we don't need this extra supplementary scorer. We need one more wing defender, one more small ball four that can kind of play alongside Anthony Davis at the five and basically a better version of Markieff Morris and what he did for the Lakers last year.
And
yeah, exactly. Like Tucker could play an upgraded version of that role, but how important is that to them? And, you know, I don't see him getting a buyout, but maybe things have gotten toxic enough in Houston that he can. I think they've lost like 10 in a row or something like that. So maybe like he'll be able to grouse his way out of there. I'm not really sure. And I know he was upset with them for not giving him an extension last offseason and that he felt like he had earned with his play and being underpaid for so long. And so, but as far as trades, it's just tough because the guys that you mentioned, Caruso, TH, yes, they're cheap, and so that makes them trade assets, but the Lakers don't have the big contract to attach to those guys to make it possible to get like a good player back in return. And so I think that when Kuzma's extension kicks in this summer, then you're really going to start to hear more trade rumors and more rumors just because he's a guy that has value, and now all of a sudden they have big enough contracts to make deals work and things like that. When they re-sign Alex Caruso, maybe you hear more noise about him at some point. But for now, it's just tough to make the contracts work. I've been playing around with the trade machine, and I think a buyout market signing is a lot more likely. And just the fact that they cut Quinn Cook to make sure that they had two open roster spots, that makes me think that they think the same thing.
And you know who I'm intrigued by? Is I'm really intrigued by the Blake Griffin. I feel like it's hard to say that he's a poor man's PJ Tucker at this stage because he's Blake Griffin. The guy was a superstar, but I feel like he is kind of a poor man's PJ Tucker in that he can shoot the three, right? His defense is the poor man's side. It's not.
Yeah, I was gonna say there's the broke part. Yeah.
Yeah, but he's a better playmaker. He's a better passer. He can bang with the big guys down low. He could play, you know, the backup big. It, maybe if he gets bought out, you're going to get him on a really cheap deal. And you know what I like, what intrigues me about him? If we play the Clippers. I want to see him. I think he'd be motivated to go against the Clippers. And it would be a lot of fun to watch.
It would be a great revenge storyline. I sort of like the idea of taking a flyer on a guy like that, but at the same time, you know, he's basically a small ball five at this point of his career. And like we were talking about, the Lakers have a lot of guys that need minutes there. And, you know, during the playoffs, I'm just not sure that I see a role for him when the Lakers downsize and when they, you know, play those versatile small ball lineups. I mean, maybe there is, but I just, you know, I have kind of a tough time seeing where he cracks in if they're not also like cutting Markieff Morris or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, the Lakers roster is so loaded right now. And
they're really good. That's the thing that like all this panicking obscures. Like, they're really good. They have a lot of guys that can play real minutes for this team. And look, they've practiced 9 times this season. You know, like these games are, we are getting to, you know, if you've ever wanted to sit and watch the Lakers practice, you are getting to do that now for 72 games this year. You're getting to watch them work on what they need to do and what they need to do well and just kind of try stuff. And I know that it's not resulting in as good of a regular season record as everyone would like, but they're very clearly not bringing their A game every single night, and they're not game planning for any specific opponents, really. You know, we saw them bust out a little bit of their defensive game plan on Dame just to give themselves a chance last night, but mostly they're not making a ton of adjustments. They're kind of keeping it simple and vanilla, and I just expect this team to play better, and they have guys that are better than they've shown so far as they round into shape during this weird offseason.
Yeah, it's tough to doubt them after what they did last year and with LeBron James heading the team. You know, it's easy to explain the last few weeks because you're missing the top five player. So we're not that too concerned in Lakerland, but you know how Laker fans are on Twitter. They're going to be in an uproar anytime they're tied with Phoenix in the loss column. Like, what's going on? Harrison, I really appreciate having you on. It's been a great time here, and you know, I want the audience to know where can they find you besides at HM Fagan on Twitter, where he's dominating the Laker Twitter game. And the next Shams, no, the better than Shams,
right after Shams, yeah.
And what, saying you got the movie podcast Rewind and Reconsider, better than Bill Simmons.
What's funny is somebody made that comparison to me. I was not even aware that they did that podcast. And then like, I'm like, yeah, actually that name does sound familiar. Oh, I mean, oh well. But I think from what I understand, the premise of our podcast is very different. I haven't listened to his just to make sure that I don't accidentally plagiarize. But
tell us more about your podcast and where we can find you in your writing, please.
Yeah, so you can check out number one Silver Screen and Roll podcast, silverscreenandroll.com. That's where I write about and podcast about the Lakers. And then Rewind and Reconsider is a movie podcast, like you mentioned, that I do with my wife. We basically, the premise of the podcast is that with very rare exceptions, the movie is one that one of us has as a favorite from childhood that the other has never seen. And then we record an intro segment where the person who hasn't seen the movie asks the person who has, but a long time ago, what to expect from it, if they think it's going to hold up, you know, what they remember about it, what introduced them to it, and like get a little bit of the nostalgia going and kind of try and get in tune with maybe an audience that hasn't seen the movie in a while. And then after about 3 minutes, you know, we take 3 minutes to talk about that or so. And then we take a quick break, we go and watch the movie, and then we come back and we talk about whether or not it holds up, how it looks in 2020, if we'd show it to our future kids, you know, like if we'd still recommend watching it today, and all of that stuff. And, you know, I think that the best ones are the one where someone has like, you know, a movie that they thought was like the greatest thing ever when they were a kid, and then it turns out like that movie really sucks in retrospect. And because it's like the flip from the intro segment of, oh, I think this is really going to hold up, to like, oh man, that was really bad. It's a lot of fun. And, you know, we banter and we have fun with it.
No, I love it because it's so true. So much of whether you like a movie or not depends on the circumstances of when you watched it. And those movies, when you're growing up, like for me, it was whatever video. I'm a little older, so whatever VHS we had, you know.
No, VHS was for me too. I'm still the VHS generation. I'm not that young.
Oh, okay. So this podcast is perfect for Ronnie. Ronnie, you gotta check it out because I feel like there's so many movies
There were
back
these block
in the
things that we used to have to put in our TV. They were shaped like a square, like the, and that was how it almost looked like giant Game Boy cartridges. And I just realized that probably dated me myself for a high school too. High schooler too.
I was trying to explain to him like the most exciting part of the day was you go to Blockbuster and you get the movie for a week, for a whole week. You had the VHS and you could watch it as many times as you want. And the only thing you got to be careful though is those late fees, man. Those late fees get you every time.
Yeah, it was like Netflix, but more expensive. You had less options, and possible late fees if you didn't watch the movie in time.
But what it created was a true passion for a movie because you didn't have that many options. You'd watch it over and over. And I was looking at the list, you know, Miss Doubtfire, there's some really good ones. And so you guys check out Rewind and Reconsider, and that's on all podcast platforms, right?
I know Spotify and Apple Podcasts. I'm not 100% sure about others.
Okay, and then the Silver Screen and Roll also. You guys check out Silver Screen and Roll. They got everything Lakers. So you only it's your one stop place to stop to forget everything you want to know about the Lakers. You can see Harrison's rise in the sports journalism.
Yeah. I'm on a quest to catch Shams. It's coming. Just wait.
Shams is coming.
Yeah.
So you guys get that Harrison Fagan rookie card, get that Jovan rookie card, and for Harrison and for Roni, serenity now, insanity later.